Lyra risked her life to save a black stallion from an icy river. She thought she was helping a wounded animal. She was wrong, because the horse she rescued belonged to the Alpha King himself. And when the king finally arrived to reclaim him, the stallion made a choice that changed everything. Lyra almost didn't stop. She was already late getting home. The sky had been warning her for an hour, that particular shade of gray that people in the borderlands learn to read the same way they learn to read faces. Flat, colorless, certain. She knew that sky. She'd grown up under it. It meant you had maybe 20 minutes before the wind picked up and the temperature dropped, and whatever was outside needed to be inside. She pulled her coat tighter and kept walking the shortcut path along the Carveth River, head down, boots crunching on the first thin layer of ice that had formed over the mud. She had firewood to bring in, a door latch that had been loose for a week, dinner to make for a father who wouldn't thank her for it, but would notice if it wasn't there. Home was 10 minutes away. She kept walking. She heard it before she saw it, a sound she didn't have a name for. Somewhere between a scream and a groan, coming from somewhere deep in an animal's chest, the kind of sound that only happens when something is running out of time, cut through every few seconds by the sharp crack of ice giving way. Lyra stopped. She stood on the path with the first flakes of snow beginning to fall and told herself it was wind, told herself it was a branch, told herself it was anything that would let her keep walking toward the warmth and the firelight 10 minutes ahead of her. Then the sound came again. She turned toward the river. The reeds at the bank were brittle and snapped against her coat as she pushed through them. The ground turned soft and treacherous near the water's edge, her boots punching through the thin crust of frozen mud with every step. She grabbed a birch branch to steady herself and looked out at the river. The Carveth ran fast in winter. Faster than it looked, because most of the speed was underneath, under the shelf ice that formed along the edges, where the current slowed, under the gray surface that gave the impression of stillness. In the middle, where the water ran deepest and fastest, the ice never fully formed, just thin plates that shifted and broke against each other. That was where the horse was, black as ink, enormous. Even from the bank, she could see how large he was, the kind of animal that shouldn't exist in this part of the territory, the kind that belonged in stories about kings and wars and places she'd never been. He was in the break in the ice up to his chest, his front legs scrabbling at the frozen edges, trying to find something to push against. Every time his hooves found the lip of the ice shelf, it crumbled. Every time it crumbled, he sank another inch. His head was still up, his neck straining, his nostrils blowing hard clouds of steam into the cold air. But his movements were slowing. He'd been in there a while. Lyra's hands were already unwinding the rope from her pack before she'd made any conscious decision. The long coil she carried for pulling fence posts. The one her father always said was overkill. The one she'd never once actually needed until this moment. She looked at the birch tree at the bank's edge. Solid. Old. Roots deep. She tied one end around it with hands that were steadier than they had any right to be, wrapping it twice, pulling the knot tight. The other end she held. She picked her way along the bank until she found a place where the ice shelf extended a few feet from the edge. Not quite river. Not quite land. That treacherous in between. She tested it with one boot. It groaned, but held. She moved out onto it. Now she was close enough to hear him breathing. Ragged, exhausted, each exhale blowing a cloud of steam that the wind took immediately. Hey. She kept her voice low and even. The same voice she used for her father when he was in one of his dark moods. The same voice she used for herself in the middle of the night. Look at me. Just look at me. The horse looked at her. She threw the rope. The first throw fell short, landing on the ice between them. She pulled it back. Threw again. This time it caught, looping around his neck, sliding toward his ears before she yanked the slack and pulled it snug. He felt the rope and lurched forward. The full, desperate weight of a drowning horse driving toward the bank hit the rope in a single instant. And the rope hit Lyra, and her boot shot out from under her on the ice before she could brace for anything at all. She went in. Not sideways, straight down through the ice shelf that shattered under the sudden shift of weight, into the black water beneath. The cold swallowing her so fast, she didn't register falling. Only the sudden roaring dark, and the brutal cold clamping around her like a fist, and the rope still in her hands, because she had not let go. Would not let go. That was the only clear thought she had. She pulled herself up it, hand over hand in the dark water, following the rope back toward the surface, the current grabbing at her coat and her legs, her lungs burning, her arms shaking with cold that had already gone all the way through her. She broke the surface gasping, river water in her throat, her eyes stinging, the cold air on her face like a second impact after the cold of the water itself. The rope was still in her hands. She found her footing. The riverbed was shallow here, just deep enough that the water hit her chest, and she planted her boots, and she pulled. Nothing. She pulled harder. The horse weighed 10 times what she did. The water was pushing against both of them. Every time his hooves found the lip of the ice shelf, it crumbled under him, sending him back down, costing him something he didn't have much left of. She hauled back with everything in her arms and went nowhere. Her whole body was shaking now. The cold had moved past her skin and into the muscles, that deep bone ache that meant the clock was running on both of them. "Come on," she said. Her voice came out wrong, half drowned, barely a voice at all. "Come on, you have to help me. I can't do this without you. Come on." The horse's eyes found hers. He was past panic. She could see it, the way his neck was sinking lower between each breath, the way his legs had slowed from violent churning to something heavier and less frequent. He was at the point just before giving up. She knew that point. She'd lived at that point for most of her life. "Not yet," she said. Quieter now, just for him. "You don't get to stop yet." "Neither do I. Come on," she pulled. And something changed in his eyes. His legs found the riverbed. His chest drove forward. The ice shelf crumbled under him, but this time he was already through it, already past it, his enormous body hauling itself up out of the water inch by inch through something that was beyond strength, something more like refusal, like decision, like an animal that had looked at the girl standing chest deep in a frozen river and decided she was worth the effort. Lyra backed toward the bank, still holding the rope, still pulling, until her boots hit solid ground and she could lean her whole weight back. He came. He climbed out of the river. Not gracefully. Not easily. He collapsed onto the bank on his front knees, and then pushed himself the rest of the way up, his sides heaving, his whole body shaking violently. He stood in the snow on trembling legs with water pouring off him and his head hanging low. Lyra sat down. Just sat down in the snow, because her legs had made that decision without consulting her. For a long moment, there was nothing but the sound of both of them breathing. His in great shuddering exhales, hers in something smaller and less controlled. And the wind beginning to pick up over the river, and the snow falling harder now, the storm arriving exactly when it had said it would. She became aware, slowly, that she was very cold. Not the shocking cold of the river, the worse kind, the settling kind, the cold that moves in and starts making itself at home, the kind that makes you want to close your eyes. She didn't close her eyes. She looked at the horse. He had stopped shaking quite so violently. His head was still low, his breathing still ragged. But his ears, those enormous ears that had been pinned flat in terror, had begun, slowly, to turn toward her. Then he lowered his head all the way and pressed his nose to her forehead. Very gently. like a question, or an answer, or something that didn't have a word yet. Lyra put her hand on the side of his face. He didn't pull away. She sat there in the snow with a half-drowned horse pressing his forehead to hers, and the storm closing in around them, and felt, in the middle of all of it, something she hadn't felt in a very long time. Not alone. "All right," she said, finally. Her voice came out strange, waterlogged and unsteady and something else underneath that. "All right, let's get you somewhere warm." She brought him to the old barn behind the farmhouse, the one nobody used since her father had sold the last of the animals 3 years ago to cover debts. She lit the lanterns, spread dry straw, found an old saddle blanket stiff with dust, and laid it across his back, even though it barely covered anything on an animal that size. It was what she had. She stayed up all night. She rubbed his legs to get the circulation moving, heated water on the old stove and cleaned the cuts the ice had opened on his hooves, sat in the straw beside him, with her own hands wrapped in strips torn from an old shirt, holding the lantern close to give warmth. The horse didn't sleep. He stood with his ears turning at every sound from the storm outside, but his eyes kept coming back to her. Toward dawn, when the blizzard had finally quieted and a gray light was beginning to come through the cracks in the barn walls, Lyra leaned back against the wood and closed her eyes for what she thought would be a moment. She woke to something warm against her face. The horse had lowered his head until his forehead was resting against her chest. Not demanding, not restless, just staying close. She called him Kyle. She didn't know where the name came from. It felt right. Part 2, 3 days. In the 3 days that followed, Lyra learned things about Coyle that she couldn't explain. He wouldn't eat if she wasn't present. The moment she left the barn, to bring more water, to get firewood, to sleep for 2 hours in the farmhouse, he became agitated, pacing, throwing his head, making a low sound in his chest that wasn't quite a whinny and wasn't quite a growl. When she came back, he stopped immediately. He let no one else near him. The neighbor's son tried to look inside the barn on the second morning out of curiosity. Kyle went to the door with his eyes rolling white and his nostrils flaring, and the boy ran before the door was even fully open. But when Lyra entered, Kyle moved toward her. She spent hours simply sitting beside him and talking, things she'd never said out loud. "My mother died when I was 4. She worked a brush through the knots in his mane. My father never told me how. He still changes the subject." Kyle's ears moved. "I have an older sister. She's everything he wanted. Beautiful, capable, easy to understand." Lyra paused. "He's not cruel. He just never knew what to do with me. Like I arrived and he realized he'd run out of room." She looked at the horse. "Do you know that feeling? I think you might. I think that's why you let me into that river." Kyle watched her the way animals watch things they've decided to trust. On the second afternoon, her father came. Marden was a man in his 50s who carried the weight of all of them in his face. He opened the barn door, saw the horse, and stopped. His face did something she hadn't seen it do before. Not anger. Fear. Specific. Cold, already knowing fear. "Where did this animal come from?" Very quiet. "The river. He was drowning. I pulled him out." Her father looked at Kyle, looked at her, looked at Kyle again. "Lyra." Something in his voice she couldn't name. "You don't know whose horse this is?" "No. But someone will come for him when the storm passes." "Yes." He took a step back. "Yes, they will." He left without saying more. And Lyra stood watching the closed door with a cold feeling in her chest that had nothing to do with the temperature. Part 3, the riders. They came on the morning of the 3rd day. 5 riders in dark armor bearing the pack's emblem, a silver wolf mid-howl inside a circle, pressed into their chest plates. Their horses breathed steam in the frozen air as they stopped in the farmyard. Lyra was outside the barn when they arrived. The leader dismounted, a large man with a scar across his jaw. "This is the Voss farm." "Yes. We have word that a stallion was found here. Black animal. Large. Property of the Alpha King." Lyra said nothing for a moment. "The Alpha King." "He's in the barn." She nodded toward it. "He's been recovering. His hooves were cut." The rider was already walking before she finished speaking. Kale met him at the door with a sound that shook the walls. The rider stepped back. "He does that with everyone," Lyra said, coming up beside him. "Except me." "Open the way then," she went in. Kyle moved to her immediately, putting his head over her shoulder. The rider stared at this like a man watching something he didn't have a category for. He put a lead rope around Kale's neck. Kale allowed it. He walked to the barn door, stepped out into the cold morning light, his black coat catching the sun like something forged rather than born, and stopped. 3 paces into the yard, the rider pulled the rope. Kale didn't move. Another pull, harder. Nothing. Kale turned his head slowly, looked at Lyra, and walked back to her, stopped at her side with the lead rope still around his neck, as though the rope was decoration, as though she was the only anchor that existed. Silence in the yard. The 4 remaining riders looked at each other. "That," the scarred man said, and his voice had lost some of its certainty, "has never happened before." Then the 6th rider arrived. He had come from the side road and dismounted far from the gate, approaching on foot, as though he needed to see the situation before being seen himself. He was taller than the others, no full armor, a dark riding coat over traveling clothes, collar turned up against the cold, dark hair, an expression that gave nothing away. But when the riders saw him, every one of them straightened at the same time. He walked to the center of the yard and stood looking at Kyle. Kyle looked at him. There was a moment, a beat of complete stillness, where the horse seemed to consider, where something ancient and unspoken passed between them. Then Kale pressed the side of his nose against Lyra's arm and stayed. The tall man looked at Lyra. She looked back. "You're the one who pulled him out," he said. "Not a question." "Yes. You went into the Carveth during the storm, alone. There was no one else." He was quiet for a moment. "What's your name?" "Lyra Voss." He looked at Kale, at her, at Kale again. "I'm Chiron." A pause. "Alpha King of this territory." Part 4, the proposal. Chiron stood in the cold farmyard for a long time, watching his horse. Kyle didn't go to him. He wasn't hostile. No wall-shaking sounds, no rolling eyes. He simply remained at Lyra's side with an impossible calm, as though the most natural place in the world was exactly where he stood. "In 10 years, Chiron said, "Kale has accepted no one but me, no rider, no handler. 3 men were sent to the healer because they tried to force him." "I believe that." The king turned his head toward her. "But?" "But he was dying of cold and fear." She looked at the horse. "Sometimes things change when someone doesn't leave you." A silence. Chiron studied her in a way she couldn't quite read. Not condescension, not ordinary curiosity. Something more careful than either. "I need you to come with him," he said. "I'm sorry?" "Kyle won't follow me without you. Not yet." He crossed his arms. "And I can't leave the royal family's sacred stallion in an abandoned barn in the outer reaches." "You can simply—" Lyra stopped. "You're the Alpha King. You can order him to come." "I've tried that." Something passed through his expression. "Kyle doesn't follow orders. He follows bonds." Lyra looked at the horse. Kyle pressed his nose to her shoulder, without looking at either of them, as though the conversation had nothing to do with him. "How long?" she said. "Until the bond settles or breaks, naturally." "And what does that mean in days?" "I don't know." Lyra looked at the farmhouse, at the window of her father's room, where she could see his shadow standing behind the glass, watching the yard. There was something in that shadow, that same cold, already knowing fear she'd seen on his face in the barn. She had spent her whole life on this farm, waiting, not knowing for what. "All right," she said. Karen nodded once. "You'll have proper accommodations in the territory, not as a prisoner." A small pause. "As a guest. What's the difference?" "Guests can leave. Part 5, the territory. The Pack's territory was 2 days' ride east, where the mountains formed a natural amphitheater of stone and pine, and the main river never fully froze because of the thermal springs feeding the basin from below. Lyra had never traveled beyond the neighboring farms. The world, she discovered, was larger than she'd understood. The territory was a living place, not the dark fortress she'd half expected, but somewhere with markets and the smell of bread and children running between adults' legs. Stone buildings with dark timber roofs. Snow that caught the afternoon light and made everything look briefly clean. She was given a room in the side wing of the main complex. Simple. Warm. A window that looked out over the stables where Kyle had been installed. The stallion refused his assigned stall. Handler spent 2 hours trying. Lyra went to the stables, opened the stall door, and said, "Come on." Kyle walked in. The head handler, an old man with the face of someone who had seen everything, watched this for a long moment. "Have you worked with horses before?" "No, we never had animals on the farm that I can remember." He nodded slowly, the way people nod when something explains everything and nothing simultaneously. It was during her first week that Lyra met Seraphine. She was in the snow-covered gardens when the other woman appeared, tall, in a deep wine-colored dress, with the kind of beauty that looked like it had been assembled carefully. Dark hair pinned with silver, eyes that measured everything in seconds and remembered the measurements. "You're the girl who saved the horse," Seraphine said, a statement that landed like a small verdict. "Yes. Lyra Voss." She pronounced the surname with precision. "From a farm in the outer reaches." "That's right," Seraphine smiled. "Perfectly arranged. Curious that Kale accepted you. He's usually intractable." "He was frightened." "Yes." Her eyes rested on Lyra one beat too long. "Frightened animals sometimes attach themselves to whatever is nearest. It doesn't always mean something." She left before Lyra could answer. Lyra stood in the garden with snow falling softly around her and the clear sense that this woman had already begun something she hadn't yet been told about. What she didn't know, couldn't know yet, was that Seraphine had already found the room. The locked room in the archive hall that the Pack's senior archivist had been instructed, 22 years ago, never to open without the Alpha's direct order. Seraphine had a gift for locked rooms. She'd spent the better part of 3 evenings working on that particular lock. On the 4th night, it opened. What she found inside was not what she expected. It was worse. That same evening, Karen came to the stables. Lyra was there. She slept poorly in closed rooms. She always had. And the warmth of animals calmed something in her that nothing else reached. She was sitting in the straw with her back against Kyle, reading by lantern light. The king stopped in the doorway. She started to rise. "Don't." He gestured for her to stay. He stood in the doorway for a moment, looking at the stallion who had his head resting in Lyra's lap like an enormous dog. "He's never done that with me," Kyren said. "What?" "Settled like that." Lyra looked at Coyle, at the king. Maybe he's always known he had it wrong with you. What do you mean? With you, he's the king's horse. He has a role, a position. She ran her hand along the stallion's neck. With me, he's just an animal that got saved. A pause. Sometimes it's easier to be yourself with someone who doesn't need you to be anything. Karen looked at her for a long moment. He didn't say anything. He left. But he came back the next evening, and the one after that. Part 6. What the Archive. Held Seraphine moved carefully. She always moved carefully. That was the difference between her and other people who wanted things. She understood that power taken too quickly looks like theft, but power revealed in pieces, in the right order, to the right people, looks like justice. She didn't go to the council immediately. She went first to 3 senior pack members individually, men who had long memories and particular feelings about bloodline purity and the proper order of things. She showed each of them a different page of what she'd found, not the whole picture. Never the whole picture at once. Just enough to make each of them go very still and ask the same question. Does the king know? And Seraphine would say, I'm not certain. That's what worries me. She let that sit for 4 days. She watched the way Lyra moved through the territory, tentative at first, then less so. The way pack members nodded to her, the way Karen's riders had stopped treating her like a guest and started treating her like something else, some undefined category that made Seraphine's jaw tighten when she noticed it. She watched Kale follow Lyra across the stable yard one morning, unprompted, unhurried, as though he simply wanted to be in the same space she was in. She watched Karen watch Lyra, and she understood that she didn't have time to be careful anymore. On the 5th day, she went to the full council. Lyra found out from a kitchen girl who brought her breakfast with an expression of someone carrying something too heavy. She went to find Karen. He was already in a meeting. She could hear raised voices through the closed door of the council hall. She stood in the corridor for a moment, and then the door opened, and the senior counselor came out and stopped when he saw her, and his face told her everything she needed to know. She went to the stables instead. Kale was restless, moving in circles, ears pinned. I know, she said. I feel it too. She sat in the straw, and for the first time in days, the old voice came back, the one she'd spent her whole life trying to argue down. You thought you mattered here. You thought Kale choosing you meant something permanent. You thought the king coming to the stables every evening was about you. It was never about you. You were useful. You were a mystery to solve. And now, you're a problem. Kale put his forehead against the side of her face. Stop it, she told him. Her voice came out unsteady. That doesn't help. But she pressed her face into the warmth of his neck and held on anyway. Kyren found her there an hour later. He looked like a man who had spent the morning inside something difficult and hadn't yet found his way out. Lyra. You knew, she said. Before you told me. You'd known for days. Yes. Why did you wait? Because I was trying to find a way to tell you that didn't feel like a trap. He closed his mouth. Because that's what it feels like, she said. You brought me here. You knew about my mother. And you said nothing while you figured out what I was to your territory. That's not what happened. Then tell me what happened. He didn't answer fast enough. And in that silence, the old voice went quiet for a completely different reason. Not because she'd won the argument, but because she'd realized she already knew the answer. She just didn't like it. He had been trying to protect her. He had done it badly. Those two things could both be true. I need some air, she said, and walked past him into the cold. Part 7. What was worth? Hiding the council convened that afternoon. Lyra sat in the back of the hall. She hadn't been invited, but no one had told her she couldn't be there, and she'd discovered that this particular gray area was available to people willing to simply occupy it. Seraphine stood at the front with the composure of someone who had rehearsed this thoroughly and was enjoying the performance. She laid out the documents one by one. The first was the registration record. Sarah Avin, born of the pack, left the territory voluntarily at age 19 with an outer reach farmer named Marden Voss. Standard, expected. The second was the death record. Sarah Avin Voss died in childbirth 4 years later. Also expected. The third was what made the room go quiet. A letter. Written in the pack's old formal script, addressed to the Alpha King's father, Karen's father, now 12 years dead, from Marden Voss. Seraphine read it aloud. Lyra listened and understood, for the first time, why her father had been afraid. The letter said, "My wife made me swear, before she died, to tell you the truth. The child is not mine. Sarah was already with child when I found her, a month before we left the territory. She told me who the father was. I am asking you, for the sake of the child's safety, to let her be raised as mine. Unknown. Unnamed in your records. If you will not, I understand. But I am asking." Silence in the hall. Then Seraphine said very quietly, "The child is Lyra Voss. And based on the timeline in this letter, her father was Aldric, the Alpha King's younger brother, who died 8 years ago, leaving no acknowledged heirs." The room erupted. Lyra sat very still in the back of the hall. She was not simply a woman with pack blood. She was not simply a hidden daughter. She was the unacknowledged child of the dead Alpha Prince, which made her, under pack law, a potential claimant to the Bloodline Council, which was exactly what Seraphine needed her to be. Because Seraphine wasn't trying to expose Lyra. She was trying to terrify the Council into expelling her. An unknown woman with royal blood and a mysterious bond with the Sacred Stallion was a threat to the established order, in a way that a simple outsider never could be. Remove her was the only move that served Seraphine's purpose. And looking at the faces around the council table, Lyra could see it working. Part 8. Kael Niels. The council's decision came at dawn. Lyra was informed by a junior official who couldn't quite meet her eyes. She was to leave the territory by midday, escorted to the border. Her presence had been deemed, the word he used was destabilizing. She went to the stables. She told herself she was going to say goodbye to Coyle. She told herself she was fine with leaving, that it was the right outcome, that she had never belonged here, and she had known that from the first day, and had been foolish to let herself forget it. She got Kyle's travel rope from the hook on the wall. He watched her do it. "I'm not taking you," she told him. "You belong here, whatever else is true. You belong here." She looped the rope around the post outside his stall. Stepped back, looked at him for a long moment, at this enormous, impossible, stubborn animal who had started all of this by drowning in a river she happened to be walking past. "You know what the worst part is?" she said. "It wasn't being hidden. It wasn't my father keeping the secret. It wasn't even Seraphine doing what she did because she was scared, and scared people do damage." She paused. "The worst part is I actually thought, for about 3 days, that I was someone who got to stay somewhere." Kyle looked at her. "Stupid," she said. "Incredibly stupid. Forget it." She picked up her bag and walked out of the stable. The open square in front of the main hall was already filling with people. Word traveled fast in the territory. It always did. And whatever combination of royal bloodline and Sacred Stallion and Alpha King's involvement had been circulating since last night, had drawn people out into the cold morning air to see what would happen next. Lyra walked through the edge of the crowd with her head down. She heard Seraphine's voice from the steps of the council hall, addressing the assembled pack members, her tone measured and careful and kind in the way that really meant this is already decided. She heard Chiron's voice respond, clipped, controlled, unhappy. She didn't stop to listen. She was almost to the eastern gate when she heard it, a sound she recognized, wood splintering, then hoofbeats on stone. She stopped. The crowd around her stopped. Kyle came through the gap between two buildings, like something out of a story, the rope trailing behind him, the post from the stable wall dragging for 3 feet before the rope finally broke free. He was moving at a controlled canter, not panicked, not wild, deliberate. He found her immediately. He always found her immediately. The crowd parted. Riders reached for their weapons. Someone shouted. Karen's voice cut through all of it. "Don't touch him!" Kale stopped 10 feet from Lyra. He looked at her. She looked at him. "You broke the post," she said. That was a structural post. Kyle took 3 slow steps forward, and then, in front of every member of the pack, in front of the council standing on the steps of the hall, in front of Seraphine, whose careful composure finally cracked, in front of Kairan, who went very still. The stallion folded his front legs and knelt, head down, in the old way. The way that, in pack tradition, was reserved for one meaning and one meaning only. I choose you, above my rider, above my territory, above myself. I choose you. Nobody spoke. The square was absolutely silent except for the wind moving through the pine trees on the eastern wall. Lyra stared at him for a long moment. Then she walked forward and put her hand on the side of his face. "Get up," she said quietly. "Stop being dramatic." Kale raised his head and looked at her with enormous dark eyes that communicated, very clearly, that he did not consider this dramatic at all. He stood and pressed his forehead to hers. Behind her, she heard Chiron descend the steps of the council hall. He walked through the crowd slowly, stopped beside her. He didn't look at Seraphine. He didn't look at the council. He looked at Lyra. "The council's decision is suspended," he said, loud enough for all of it. "Pack law states that a bond recognized by a sacred animal supersedes administrative judgment." A pause. "That's not new law. It's older than this building." The senior counselor opened his mouth. "Look at the animal," Chiron said, "and tell me what you see." Nobody said anything. The senior counselor looked at Kyle, who was standing at Lyra's shoulder with the specific stillness of something that has made its decision and is done discussing it. The counselor closed his mouth. Part 9, her choice. Lyra didn't make any decisions that day. She went back to the stables with Kale, sat in the straw, and let the weight of everything settle for a while without trying to sort through it. Kyle stood over her, like a very large, very opinionated roof. Chiron came in the evening. He brought 2 cups of tea. She looked at them. "I asked how you take it," he said. "A few days ago, Mira in the kitchen told me." Lyra looked at the cups. She knew nobody had asked about her tea in 22 years of existing on that farm. She knew it was a small thing. She also knew it wasn't. She took the cup. "The letter," she said. "From my father. You'd read it before Seraphine found it." "Yes." Was there more in that room? He sat on the stall gate. "Letters from your mother. To my father. She was asking him to watch over you from a distance. She knew she was dying, and she didn't want Mardin to be alone with the secret." He paused. "My father agreed. He put the room under seal and never told me about it. I found it 3 days after you arrived." Lyra absorbed this. "And Aldric." Her voice came out careful. "He was your uncle." "He was. He died before you were born. He never knew." Something complicated moved through Karen's expression. "He would have wanted to." She looked at the tea in her hands. "Seraphine is still here," Yes. She's not finished. No, she's not. Lyra nodded slowly. This was, at least, honest. I'm going to stay, she said. Not because of the bloodline, not because the council, or the law, or any of that. She looked up at him. Because Kyle broke a structural post to come and find me, and I'm not going to let that be for nothing. Something in Kyren's face shifted. Not a smile. Something quieter than that. Something she'd need more time to learn to read. That's a practical reason, he said. I'm a practical person. He looked at Kale. Kale looked back at him with absolutely no expression. He's never going to like me as much as he likes you, Karen said. Probably not. Lyra took a sip of her tea. You'll have to live with that. Epilogue. 3 weeks later, on an afternoon with thin winter sunlight coming through the library windows, Lyra was reading her mother's letters for the third time when she heard the stable yard go quiet in a particular way. She went to the window. Kyle was in the yard, loose, no halter. Normal. Kyren was standing by the fence, also normal. What wasn't normal was that Kale had walked over to him on his own, stopped beside him, and was now simply standing there, not demanding anything, not performing anything, just standing next to the man who had been his for 10 years, in the same easy way he stood next to Lyra. Kyren put his hand on the stallion's neck. Kyle allowed it. Lyra watched the two of them for a moment, the king and his horse, finding their way back to each other, through whatever had changed between them, and felt something loosen in her chest that she hadn't known was still held tight. She went back to her mother's letters. An hour later, Kyren appeared in the library doorway. She looked up. He came in, sat in the chair by the window, and opened a document from his coat pocket. He didn't explain why he was there. He just stayed. Lyra looked at him for a moment. Then she went back to reading. Outside, in the stable yard, Kale stood in the last of the afternoon light with his eyes half closed, in the particular way of animals that have found exactly where they want to be and have no intention of going anywhere else. And before you go, did you feel it? That moment in the square, when Kale broke free and walked through the crowd and knelt. Did you hold your breath? Did you feel something tighten in your chest when Lyra put her hand on his face and told him to get up? Tell me in the comments. I want to know which moment stayed with you longest. Was it the river, the cold, the rope, the fall into the water? Was it Kale refusing to leave her side in the farmyard in front of the king's own riders? Or was it the stable yard in the evenings? Kyren coming back, night after night, without explaining why? Leave a comment and let me know. The next story is already on your screen. Click it. I'll see you there.